Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Cabinet of Curiosities, episode 4 is over, but we are just getting started here on post-show recaps, going through the new Netflix show, Cabinet of Curiosities. We're halfway done with the first season or first series or only series. Who knows if there's going to be more? Well, I'm sure we'll talk about that at some point. But we have hit episode 4, The Outside, and someone who is no longer going to be on the outside of this podcast once we bring him in, it's Todd. Todd Delay-Brain, how are you?
I'm here. I'm ready to harness the power of retinol and peptides to bring out my inner beauty.
Todd, you don't need to bring out your inner beauty, Todd. You are perfect just the way you look. There's no need to use anything at all.
Yeah, the fact that you think that is what's wrong with you, Adam.
Well, there's a lot that's wrong with me, but that list is far too long for this podcast, that is for sure. So, Todd, here we are, episode 4. We're halfway through the series. We have marked half of the stories here that this show is trying to tell us, and I have to say, they've all been very different, and we really fit a couple things. I'm just going to make some very bold statements here right at the very beginning. This might be one of the weirdest episodes of television that I've ever seen. Just full stop. No exceptions. Just like full stop. One of the weirdest episodes of television I've ever seen. But also, in my mind, this is the high watermark for the show.
Hey, Adam, remember when I told you that there was one episode I thought you would really like? This was the episode.
Oh, boy, I don't know what that says about me in particular. But this, in my mind, is the best episode that we've gotten so far. I thought it was really interesting. I thought it was really fun. The performances, yet again, I feel like we say this every episode of just like the actual acting in these episodes is phenomenal. Like, it's just so, so good. And the way they're able to capture it, it's a dark episode in the sense that like what is actually happening has a very like dark and pessimistic message that you know we'll talk about here. But I will say, to the credit of this episode, there were no like dark scenes. I could see everything even when it was creepy. There was a lot of like light. It felt like there was horror, but it was horror in the story and not in the like the actual shooting and visual of it. And if you're gonna give me stuff that's gonna freak me out, that is how I want it. This is how I can stomach this stuff, even though it's wild, Todd. There's some wild stuff this episode.
Oh, indeed there is. Yeah, I warned everyone last episode that this was going to be a weird one, and rewatching, like, it's a weird one. It is definitely, and it's this is the sort of thing, it's one of those episodes where for parts you're like, okay, is this in her head? Is this really happening? You're just not quite sure through a lot of it, and that's a fairly standard horror thing. You know, there I've seen quite a few things that kind of had the sort of idea of like, okay, it's a psychological thing where you're never quite sure, is this person really losing their mind or are they actually dealing with something that's supernatural? And the thing with this episode, like, it's never really explained exactly what's going on or what's real, what's in her head. It's like kind of is ambiguous at the end. And, you know, I think your enjoyment can, you know, depend a bit on your level of enjoyment of ambiguity. Like, there's some people who would hate something like this where there's not like a clear-cut answer, but if you have like an openness to ambiguous stories, I think you can find a lot of enjoyment in this.
Yeah, it's really interesting. We talked a little bit, it would have been last week or 2 weeks ago, the episode of Huey, where we talked about ambiguity. I was having this conversation with Melissa and Kevin about, can stories end in this way that is more ambiguous rather than a clear cut? And my answer is almost universally, yes, it can. It just has to be done in a way where the episode or the story or the series, is what we were talking about, the series doesn't present us with just like this big mystery box of what is in here and that be the focus of the show. And I think that, like, to me, the important parts of this episode were not the actual functionality of what the cream or lotion or whatever we're going to call it, Alloglow, what it was actually doing. That part of it, it really didn't matter to me. It was interesting. And I mean, they showed us like some of the effects. They kind of gave us maybe an idea, but I don't think that the story was centered around what does this product do versus like, what is the effect that this is having? Why is she so sucked into this? And then what are the implications of it? And so I think just like when we talk about that ambiguity, especially here on Poster Recaps, where we talk so much about story and so much about execution, like we spend a lot of time on Poster Recaps talking about this kind of stuff. This is what we do all the time. You can be a part of the fun as well if you join us. Patreon.com/postshowrecaps. Come join the fun with us. Tell me if this story worked for you as well as the other stories that we were talking about as well. But like, I enjoy I don't mind the ambiguity, I will say, when it's not presented to me as this is the purpose of the show, but rather as a feature of what we are watching. And that is exactly what we got here, because again, I just don't think that was what they were trying to show us, was here's this cool thing. Because, and this is where I'm going to use my little bit of evidence here of the show to prove to everyone that I watched it. I did watch it. I absolutely did. They didn't whip out a bottle of Alloglow from the cabinet, because I feel like that would have been a much easier is the wrong word, but I'm going to use it anyway. It would have been a much easier thing to do if we were thinking about like, oh, here's this weird, creepy thing that's doing things to people and mind control and hallucinations and peptides and whatever. And that's not what they did. They chose something else. And, you know, we'll talk about what that something else was, but they chose something else. And I thought it was actually a much better choice for the story overall. So Todd, I'm coming into this. This is the high watermark of the season. This is my new expectation for what Cabinet Curiosities is. This was far, far better, I think, than the first three. And I was really impressed. This was just a genuine episode of television that I enjoyed.
I'm really happy to hear that, because I thought initially that this one might be one that you would enjoy. But then as I was rewatching it, I started like to you know, question myself, like, I don't know. But I'm really happy to hear that that you liked it. Yeah, it is one of my more favorite episodes of the season. It's not my favorite, but it definitely is up there. It's like the upper half of episode rankings for me for the season, because it's just like, it's weird, and you know, I love me some weird. It's like, it's really funny, like some great performances, some, you know, I love Kate Micucci. You know, I've always loved her from whenever I first saw her in Scrubs many, many years ago, and then Garfunkel and Oates, and she does voice work for tons of things. She's really good. I've been a bit thing of Martin Starr for a long time. I really like Dan Stevens, isn't in it a whole lot, but whenever he is there as the Alloglow guy, it's just like, it's so good. Yeah, no, I think this is definitely one of the best episodes of the season for sure.
So let's talk about this cast a little bit, because I feel like this was probably the most recognizable like main trio, at least for me personally. I know we've like obviously recognized some of them before, but like we're talking about Kate Micucci. I know her probably most from Big Bang Theory. She was in that, but like she had a ton of one-off appearances in just like so many other shows. I feel like Kate Micucci is a pretty big name to get here overall for this episode, right? I mean, that's maybe not the biggest name of the series, but like I think in contention for top two or three names of the series to get a top.
That's interesting, because it's always hard to gauge someone's like fame relative to other people, because I love Kate Micucci, but I would not have ranked her as being a bigger name than some of the other people that we've seen in some of the other episodes necessarily, but because she's been in a lot of stuff, but she isn't someone who necessarily has had like starring roles in a lot of stuff. So she's been like lots of supporting roles in a lot of things. And again, she's done lots of voice work, but she's not necessarily always like at the forefront. So I think she's a really recognizable face. I think you'll see her a lot, but I don't know if I would have ranked her higher than some of the other people. Not to say that I don't think she's a big get. I was really surprised to see her pop up in this, because you know, I haven't really necessarily seen her like horror related things. But the fact that it was like kind of a more comedic thing made it make a little bit more sense. But you know, I definitely think that she's like a fairly big name. Well, like there are a few other bigger ones for me.
There certainly might be. We haven't gotten to what I do think is probably the biggest name. But speaking of comedic, Martin Starr as well, someone who I've seen in probably every show that all of my sitcoms that I love. I mean, gosh, he's, you know, he's been in How I Met Your Mother. He was in an episode of Community, I think, as well. He was a New Girl for an episode. I mean, like, he's in all of these various shows. And you know, very distinctly here, I don't see him as a horror actor, like an not even just like, oh, he's kind of on the fringe, like he does both. Like, I don't think, maybe he's done stuff before, Todd, that you can tell me, but like, when I think of him, in no way does my mind go to, this is someone who it makes sense to be in a horror film.
Yeah, I off the top of my head, I don't remember Martin Starr popping up in any sort of horror things. I think the closest, I think his character on Silicon Valley was a Satanist, I believe, if I remember correctly. It's been a long time since I watched like any of Silicon Valley. But beyond that, no, I think he's primarily done, you know, lots of comedies. You know, he was in like the Spider-Man movies recently as one of the teachers, like primarily comedic roles for Martin Starr. Yeah, he's not something I necessarily associate with genre films or shows.
Well, and then the final name that you said there, Dan Stevens, who again was not you know, in this episode as much as some of the others. Todd, do you want to take a guess as to what I know him from? Because it's just one thing that I like very distinctly know Dan Stevens from, and it's kind of, you know.
Oh man, that's interesting, because like the big ones are Downton Abbey and Legion. Those are like his two big series.
It's
not either one of those. And yeah, I don't know. What do you know Dan Stevens from, Adam?
The movie Eurovision.
Okay. Yeah.
He was very fun there. Certainly a little bit of a different role to be sure. But yeah, like I'm saying, I feel like this cast is fairly well known here right off the top. If, you know, basically my gauge for is a cast well known is like, do I actually know something that they've done / would maybe know their names if I saw them? Because I'm so bad with names, and I just like, I'm not the kind of person that like remembers this kind of stuff. And I knew all three of them. And so, you know, not for nothing here. I feel like this episode, again, was elevated by the cast. And I will say, I think it starts right at the very beginning with Mikuchi and like how she plays this character. And I think that all three of them really get into character so much. They are wild, very weird, very quirky characters that I do think have very distinct personalities that come through right from the beginning. And so just like, you know, right at the beginning, kudos to all of them, because I feel like this is just superbly done and gets us in without having to ask like too many questions right at the very beginning about like, oh, what is this? And so you know, I was very impressed by that. But of course, they would not have been able to do that without this story, without this very weird, out there, interesting, I'm going to stop using adjective now just for the sake of doing it. But Todd, this was a wild story. And I think you're about to tell me that it was based on something. And I'm already concerned that it was based on anything. But Todd, tell us a little bit about the story and then how they implemented it this episode.
Yeah, so this episode is called The Outside, but the story it was taken from was actually called Some Other Animals Meet. And it was actually a webcomic. It was like a webcomic, just like a short story done in comic form by the cartoonist Emily Carroll. Emily Carroll kind of got some viral fame doing horror webcomics several years ago. And this is one of hers. And it's one of those situations where the episode takes like elements from the story but spins them all in very, very different ways. I would say the story is in some ways even more ambiguous about what's going on than the episode is, but the webcomic story doesn't have a lot of the trappings of this one. It's mainly kind of the Gina character who is, it's like kind of a mix of Gina and Stacy, where the main character in the webcomic is a person who is like selling the aloe glow, but she can't use it herself because it causes her to break out. And then she is having these conversations and then starts using it. And you have the whole thing with the aloe glow coming to life, but there's no husband. There's none of that. There's none of the coworker stuff. It's like a really short, really brief thing. And they basically just take a couple of elements, this person trying to use the stuff, even though it's causing them harm in the hopes that they will transform them. It takes that idea and then spins it in very, very different directions and takes it in very, very different ways. So it's like took this idea, but then the director and the writers like went in other directions with it. The director's name is Anna Lily Amirpour. She's done three feature films, all genre films of different levels. Her most well-known in horror genre circles, at least, and her most critically acclaimed, that still like has like I think 90s on Rotten Tomatoes, I think, last I looked. It's called A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. And it's was actually an international film. I believe it, I'm trying to remember, was it Palestine where it was set? Somewhere, it was like in the Middle East setting, and it was like a vampire film. But it's also just like a very introspective, contemplative character study that happened to have vampires in it. And it's a really well done film. The other movie of hers I've seen was called The Bad Batch, and is like super out there dystopian thriller with Jason Momoa as a leader of a group of cannibals in the like near future. It's wild. It is a wild film and not as good as Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. I think Bad Batch is probably closer in tone to The Outside, but none of her previous works is anywhere near as offbeat and quirky and funny as this is. So whenever I like went back and saw who directed this, I was really surprised because this is not the sort of style that I've come to expect. Although the two films I've seen from her have been very different styles. So again, it's not like she has like a concrete style, but it doesn't really fit super well into either one of those. So it's kind of like an interesting thing, but I've enjoyed her other movies and I've really enjoyed this.
Yeah. It was an incredible job here, kind of bringing this story to life and making sure that we were able to get the full, characters, of this story, because I feel like they're very complex, and very interesting. And the other thing I will say, probably more than the other episodes, although it certainly was present in the other episodes, I really felt the message of this story, like front and center. And I think that like they probably hit us over the head with it a little bit, maybe too much. But I think that that's okay, because I think it's like a very valuable message to send here, and they told it in such an interesting way. So let's recap the episode here briefly. Unless you, of course, you have more.
Well, I just want to correct myself. Girl Walks Home a Lot. It takes place in Iran. I just want to make sure that I got the right.
Sure. Yes. Right. So. Everyone was going to come for you, Todd. I was going to make them come for you. Okay. So the episode itself. So we open up with the awkward, very mousy blank bank clerk, Stacy, who spends her days feeling on the outside of her gossipy coworkers and nights glued to the TV, eating aggressively chicken wings. After being invited to a secret Santa party at her coworker Gina's house, Stacy kills and stuffs a duck as a gift, which is met with confusion and disgust by everyone else, probably because she is the biggest box ever known to man. Gina gifts everyone the very expensive skin cream Aloe Glow. And Stacy has an extreme allergic reaction to putting on right there at the party. And we go back. She's unable to sleep due to the itching. Stacy gets up to watch TV. And during an Aloe Glow commercial, the spokesperson begins talking directly to her, convincing her that she needs more Aloe Glow to transform herself. Even though she's already had this allergic reaction, Stacy continues using Aloe Glow against her husband Keith's protest, convinced that the rashes and discomfort are signs of it working. It's buried underneath, Todd. One evening, the Aloe Glow appears to come alive, forming a humanoid shape that embraces Stacy on the lips. This was a very interesting scene there. When her husband tells her that he won't allow her to keep harming herself with the Aloe Glow, Stacy just kills him, then submerges herself in a bathtub of aloe glow. And then finally she emerges from it and traipses around the house, just aloe glow getting absolutely everywhere. And then, because we're not done yet, after she transforms, she stuffs her husband's body and heads to work, where all of her coworkers are absolutely enamored by her now that she has had this aloe glow up here. There's a lot here going on, Todd. Oh my goodness. Yeah, and you know, there's not a ton of characters. We already talked about, you know, Stacy as well. Kind of, I love this awkward, mousy character. We're opening up with the chicken wings. We use the microwave a lot as well in this episode, of just like looking on the other side because they're like staring at it, and it's like, man, we're making chicken wings and mini corn dogs, like maybe or pigs in a blanket or whatever it was. You know, maybe calm down here a little bit. But overall, like I said, I really enjoyed this episode. I thought there were a lot of strong moments character-wise. And I think there were a few scenes that I'm definitely going to call out here that were being really, really good. But of course, we have to start at the very beginning with the cabinet. Because, you know, every episode starts with pulling something out of this cabinet. And he's walking around the cabinet being like, oh, what could we pull out this time? You know, an era of anticipation that we're maybe going to pull out something ridiculously cool. And he whips out a remote.
It's a magic wand, Adam.
He whips out a remote. I have a remote right here. It's a remote, Todd. This was really, man.
I warned you last time. Keep your expectations low for this one, because I knew.
I didn't know they had to be that low, though. Oh my gosh. Okay, Todd. What did you think here? Am I overreacting?
Well, maybe a little, but I mean that's your brand. I do see. With your expectations for wanting this like mystical stuff, like definitely I can see the disappointment. It wasn't the best thing, but I did like Del Toro. He's talking about TV and how it's a way to like escape and how you can like find yourself in distant lands using this magic wand. And so he's trying to be really poetic about what the remote control is. But at the end of the day, it's just a remote control.
It's just a remote.
So, but I think like the big difference between you and me is like you are like expecting so much from like this introductory device, and I'm not. It's like, okay, it's like a jumping off point to get to the episode, and I never attached that much hopes and dreams about it being like these wondrous things, and so I'm not feeling disappointment because I didn't have the expectation going in, I guess. Whereas you are constantly hoping and praying that's going to match like the necklace of the second episode.
Listen,
and
okay, here's all I'm gonna say. I don't think it's like hopes and dreams of something brilliant here. I don't think I'm like trying to be that dramatic, but the show is called Cabinet of Curiosities. My expectation is from the show. This is not like me being like, oh, this thing that they have to introduce each time must be interesting. They are telling me we're going to introduce a thing each time and call it that it's from a cabinet of curiosities. I am not curious about a remote. I know what a remote does. It's very simple.
But you don't know the story attached to the remote. And I think that's like the thing why it winds up in the cabinet is because it has a story attached.
They barely even used the remote. The TV was just turning itself on and off like the whole time. Like the remote was pointless.
That I'll give you. That's the point I'll give you. That's why I said like this one didn't really, you know, didn't have as much direct link as some of the other ones. So yeah, I'll definitely give you that.
Okay. Well, we open we see the suburban streets filled with Christmas lights. It is Christmas time. And I, like Todd said, I am a sucker for lights. I always go drive around and see the lights. I'm a big like crystal market type of person. I love that whole hot cocoa in the snow, having a fire. I just love it all. But of course we zoom in on Stacy's kitchen as she is microwaving a massive plate of wings here. Just a big plate of wings in the microwave before she sits down in front of the TV, flipping through the channels, and she's just going to town on those wings. And Todd, I have to just say, wings put in the microwave, terrible. absolute worst. I mean, that is the worst possible way that you could reheat wings. Put them in an air fryer. If they're wet, you can put them in an oven. I mean, a toaster oven. There's so many better ways to cook wings. If you're putting them in the microwave, you should be rethinking some things.
I'll take your word for it. And it's taken this many episodes to get Adam's Kitchen Corner on this podcast.
Yeah, so probably. Yeah, we get it a couple times here. So she's sitting in front of the TV, flipping through channels. She hears some noises and grabs an axe. So dramatic right from the very beginning. Like, massive of a reaction here. Of course, at this point, I didn't know what the episode was going to be. Like, maybe she's going to go kill a bunch of people. Who knows? It's not what happens. She goes room to room. She's like, finds nothing. And then she calls her husband, Keith, where we're introduced to Keith, who is a police officer. I think he might be a higher level than just a regular officer. I don't really know. They didn't spend a ton of time on like the work of it all for him, who is very reassuring and is like, hey, there's nobody in the house, just like all of the other times that she is called. So we immediately get the sense that like she's very paranoid about this kind of stuff, maybe very overprotective. And then that she certainly has called Keith many, many times in this situation. Interesting opening here for Stacey Todd.
Yeah, and one other thing that kind of shows up as she's in the basement searching for the sounds is that's when you first see all these taxidermied animals. Yeah. And she asks one of them, have you seen anything? And it doesn't answer. So that's like, okay, that's good. Because that could have been freaky. But no, it's like she's like just so paranoid. And her husband's just like, yep, Stace, you know. Just like, because she even like, can you say the thing? Because she knows what he's going to say, but she has to hear him say it. So like I said, it's like this great introduction, this kind of quirky character who is like so paranoid about these noises. And even after he reassures her, she's still like, but what this time there is someone? But then he just hangs up because he has obviously dealt with this many, many times.
A lot of times. Todd, are you a taxidermy person? Do you like that kind of stuff?
Not really. I've never had any taxidermied animals. I'm not necessarily opposed to the practice, but it's not something that I've ever really sought out myself.
Okay. I'm like maybe slightly opposed, but what was the one movie that had Steve Carell in it that was, they did a bunch of taxidermy? What am I thinking of here? What was it? Dinner for Schmucks? Is that,
oh, yeah.
Is that something?
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds right.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of experience with this kind of stuff. So that's my one reference for you there. Look at me referencing a movie on a podcast with you, Todd. You should be proud.
I'm very proud.
They keep going. The next day, we see Stacey at work. She works at a bank, and her coworkers are all gossiping quite loudly while Stacey kind of is like standing to the side, looking on just like, almost as, you know, looking out into space. She's not really engaging with them at any point. And of course, we hear some of the conversation, very sexual conversations happening this episode, Todd, like really sexual conversations.
Yes, very much so. The women are talking about their loved ones. They're talking about other people's relationships. They're talking about anything and everything. Yeah, they are not shy about getting you the details about their sex lives or speculating on other people's sex lives.
Yeah, and I know we're working at a bank, but there's more than one talk of endowment, let me tell you. you know, she continues, and the interesting portion here is that we see Gina, who seems to be like the quasi leader of the group, if we're talking about, you know, the girls over there. She's rubbing lotion on her hands. We don't know exactly what this is, but Stacey is very focused on that this is what's happening, even mirroring some of the motions that she does, which is very odd. But she is in just another world. She's not really paying attention, but also she's paying a lot of attention while still not paying attention. It's a very weird in-between space here. But this scene ends pretty quickly because after closing, we do get her coworker Cassidy bring Stacey a bag to draw out of, a name for Secret Santa. They're going to have a little party. There's a Secret Santa involved. She was the last one to get a pick, and she draws. And of course, she's going to draw Gina, which is a very perfect name. Like, they nailed the name for Gina there. And she gets Gina for the Secret Santa, Todd. How do you feel about Secret Santas?
Secret Santas can be fun if you know the people fairly well, I think, but there's always a danger of Secret Santas, like especially an office Secret Santa, of someone that you don't know getting your name. And if your Secret Santa doesn't do a thing where they, you know, give you a chance to say what you would and wouldn't like. There's always a chance. So, like, I hate, like, scented candles. Like, scented candles, like, give me headaches. I'm sensitive to them. And the number of times I've gotten just any sort of scented thing, I have problems with. The number of times I've gotten scented gifts from people over the years is, like, way too many. So, so a Secret Santa, whenever you can, like, say, oh, yeah, so here's the things that I would like. Here's the sort of things I definitely do not want. Then Secret Santas can be fun. But I'm not a big gift guy. Like, you talk about, like, the languages of appreciation. Like, I don't mind getting gifts, but I'm not someone who, like, is like thinks to give gifts to people. I know giving gifts is a big thing for you. That's not something that is like my go-to for that sort of thing. So Secret Santa's be fun, but it's also a little bit of pressure sometimes of like, what if I get them something and they don't like it? You know, it's supposed to be the thought that counts, but is it really the thought that counts for everyone? I don't know.
Admittedly, I kind of think it is. Although I will say a big part of the reason why I am such a big gifts guy, number one, because I feel like people should have more things just in general. I love, like, that's a very generic statement there. But also, it's so hard for me to justify buying things for myself, but it is so easy for me to justify buying things for other people because it's a gift. Yeah, I can spend $100 on whatever for them. If I were to spend $20 on me, I don't know. Like, I don't think I can afford that. And so, you know, I do love that double standard there. But I will say I have never given the gift that Stacey gives. And so we see her go back. There's a lot of very evocative music here. Stacey's singing Jingle Bell Rock as she drives into the party. And we see her, back there. But even before she's driving, she shoots and stuffs a duck. We did talk about this a little bit earlier. Yikes. At this point. So, you know, maybe you're into this kind of stuff. Maybe you're into, you know, obviously she is and she really enjoys that. I would just say officially, I would not recommend this as a gift to someone who you don't know if they actually like it. Maybe even if you do know, but like, especially if you don't know if they like it, a stuffed duck that you just shot. I don't know, Todd, this would be a pretty bad gift for me personally.
Yeah. I think it is definitely a very odd choice. That's a very puzzling choice. And again, like, an insight into just how different and on the outside Stacey is, that in her brain, this is the perfect thing to bring to this person who she is kind of idolizing. And she talks about how Gina's whole life is like a catalog, her shiny hair, her pretty skin, she looks like an angel, all this stuff. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to kill and gut a bird and stuff it full of stuff and give it to her, because that fits with my image of this perfect person, right? Yeah, it's puzzling, to say the least.
She does seem to enjoy it. I think that, like, she finds it therapeutic to, like, go through the process, I guess. We don't need to talk about, like, all of that too much. But of course, this is where we also see her talking with her husband, Keith, who is very skeptical of this whole situation. Stacey hits him back with just, you know, this is what women do. This, they, like, have to warm up to each other and stuff like that. And it's where we begin to get some of the language of Stacey being rather explicit that she feels like she doesn't belong in this group, that she feels left out, or, you know, that she doesn't match with what is going on with the other women. Keith is trying to reassure her, saying that doesn't matter. You match with me, like, you know, that kind of stuff. And it just doesn't seem to have any effect, because Stacey is very dead set on this party and very dead set on being part of the group. And, you know, there she goes to the party, to Gina's party. She walks in. Gina's a very nice house. And she whips out this just massive box, like, truly massive, like the kind that you would see in, like, in a way over exaggerated How the Grinch Stole Christmas type. You know what I mean? Like, just
it's biggest the size box. The Grinch could be hiding inside this box.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
How big this box is.
Absolutely.
Like Jim Carrey version of the Grinch could be hiding inside this box. It's
Jim
so
Carrey
massive.
Could be in the box for all I know. And so, you know, inside, the women are being very gossipy, just as they were before. Again, a lot of sexual talk this episode. I don't think anyone is here to listen to you and I talk through that sexual talk. If you are, I'm curious, let me know, but I don't think you are. I just don't see that being.
I know I'm not.
Todd's not. That's okay. And they are all very complimentive of Gina specifically, who again seems to be kind of like ruling the party here a little bit, Todd.
Yeah, and one thing I love about this scene is as you're doing the gossip, it's kind of the camera's kind of circling around, and the women are all kind of standing in a circle, kind of like doing like close-ups of all of their faces a little bit. But as it's kind of like spins around, Stacy is outside the circle. She is not like everyone, all the other women kind of standing shoulder to shoulder in the circle, and Stacy is behind and she's angled so you can see her clearly. And there is space for her to stand up and stand in the circle with the rest of them, but she just isn't. And she's not contributing to the conversation at all. I think the only time she says anything is one of them says how much like a facelift costs, and Stacy blurts out the amount in like shock. But other than that, she doesn't say anything, but she's just like standing outside the circle, just on the outside, as the episode is titled, and just reacting. And so she has these, Kate Micucci has this wonderfully expressive face through all of this. And so she's like engaged in the conversation and reacting, you know, physically to everything she's saying, but she is not engaging verbally and not taking part of it. And she's just on the outside. And it's almost a bit of that self-fulfilling prophecy thing. Cause she talks a lot about, you know, she doesn't match, she doesn't fit in. That's going to come up over and over again in the episode. But here's a chance, like she could have like walked into the circle. She could have been part of the circle. She could have like joined in the conversation, and knowing Stacy, she probably would have said something horribly awkward and then it would have been awkward. But at this point, it's not like they're trying to exclude her. It's just that she has like kind of almost excluding herself, because she could walk forward and join the group, but she's just like doesn't feel comfortable and is standing back. And on a certain level, I used to be like that to a certain degree. I used to be very shy and someone who didn't always feel like I would belong. And so I would kind of like stay on the outskirts of things and wait for people to invite me in instead of like, you know, trying to join in things. So I have some sympathy for Stacy during this scene, but the way that it's shot, it's like this very exaggerated camera angle with like close up on the women and this kind of like Stacy in the background, kind of at a distance and just obviously on the outskirts of everything. I thought it was like really interesting way that the scene was set up.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, right after that, we get, you know what it's time for, Todd? It is time for the gift exchange, because that's what everyone's here to do. That is the big item of the party. And my gift to you, dear listener, is some ads. That's where we're going to go right now.
You're so generous.
I know. I'm a giver. That's what they say. So open them up. Enjoy them real nice. But definitely don't return them. And we'll be back in just a couple of seconds. Okay, how did everyone enjoy their ads? I think that was a good gift. I think it was a good, I got every listener in Secret Santa and I gave them all ads, Todd. Do you think that was what they wanted?
It's the thought that counts, Adam. It's the thought that counts.
that's good. We'll take thought here. Ads might be better than what is being given in this gift exchange though, because it appears they're the Secret Santa element of just went right out the door right at the very beginning. Unless there's only one way that this is actually a Secret Santa is if Gina was like, I'm gonna draw four names, and then there was only one name left and they were like, okay, well I guess we're gonna give this to Stacy. Todd, this was not a Secret Santa.
Yeah, and they even say like, oh, it's time for a not so Secret Santa, and Stacy's like, wait, what? I thought it was Secret Santa. Oh no, it's not. Everyone knows what everyone wants. And Stacy's like, I didn't know what anybody wants. It's very obvious she did not know what anyone wants. But yeah, it's basically just Gina handing out gifts to everybody. Gina gives every single one of the women, including Stacy, the exact same thing. And they open up and it's Aloe Glow.
Aloe Glow cream. The way the same product that they were rubbing on their hands earlier in the bank. And of course, we go very quickly here to Stacy giving her gift to Gina, pulls out the giant box, and of course it is a stuffed duck. I will say Gina was actually way more like respectful and kind of okay with it, at least than I was expecting at this point. I certainly thought they were going to go the route of like, oh, that is gross. Like, you're the worst. You need to leave and stuff like that. Nope. She was just like quasi polite, like, oh, we're just going to put this back in its home and we're going to put it back over here. She wasn't like aggressive or gross or like mean about it, which I kind of appreciated that, because I think that one of the interesting elements of the story, like you're talking about, Todd, is like, are they actually excluding her, or does she feel it more than it's actually happening? And I think that like this reaction to it really puts a pin in that argument, Todd.
Yeah, I was like you, I was very surprised. So I was expecting like the explosion, and the other women do kind of mutter about how weird that is, how disgusting that is. And yeah, I mean, especially if she like gives the details of what she did to it. After Gene's like, did you shoot this? Like, oh yeah, I shot him. Did I skin him? I took his insides out so he wouldn't rot. I'm like, yeah, Stacey, you probably didn't need to, especially that last part. You know, Christmas party, not really the point to talk about rotting insides, I would say. It's probably like a good general rule of thumb. Yeah, but through this whole sequence, Gina is like, you know, I mean, she's obviously thrown off. She's obviously, you know, disconcerted by it, but she's very polite about it. And even at the end of the party, she's really polite to Stacey. So I was very surprised. So I was expecting her to be that kind of stereotypical, you know, snooty character who's going to just like, oh, how dare you. The other interesting thing in this scene is whenever she gets the gift, the women start chanting, open it, open it. And Stacey joins in. It's the first time that Stacey is like joined in on any of the activities. And it's this thing that's going to kind of humiliate her and kind of like distance her. So it's like she finally joins in and then it goes poorly for her. So it's like, you know, damned if she does, damned if she doesn't here.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say is I would like to be any of the other women as a part of this Secret Santa exchange, where you like get to just get a gift. It's basically a party favor is what's happening here, but also Gina gets a gift. So very weird Secret Santa situation. If anyone needs some consulting as to how to run your Secret Santa or gift exchange, we would love to help you, because this is not it. Don't do what they're doing here. However, of course, ritualistically, almost they all have to put on the aloe glow. Everyone is putting it on, and Stacey tries it, and it does not take very long for this to go south. It goes south very, very quickly. They're so, again, weirdly sexual about it. On the other side, all the women are like rubbing each other's chests with this aloe glow. And Stacey, again, is all alone on the other side in a chair, also trying to like putting it on her face. And like the dichotomy here between like the sexualness on the other side and just like how gross Stacey's face gets afterwards is very funny. Like they do a really good job of like displaying that here. But this goes poorly. Very quickly, she has a terrible reaction to it, and her face starts to get so, so red. And it's just like worst case scenario. If you've ever been at a party and you're like, you have a pimple or something, you get something on your face, you like have it, like it's terrible. You never want that. You have to figure out a way to leave or like deal with the situation. But she's right there front and center, and her face looks so red, Todd, so red.
Yeah, it's so bad. And I already mentioned like the camera work in this episode. I love that the camera lots of times will do like really these kind of strange angles or do these really interesting things. And during the sequence, like it's kind of like slow motion and strange angles for all this. And like just a real close up of Stacey just kind of like rubbing her face with this like weird grin on it. And then she's like, oh, I can feel it tingling. And then they look and go, yeah, I think you're having a reaction. What? And then just like, it's like, horrible, horrible rash all over her face.
Yeah. So she leaves. It turns out Gina gave her an ice pack and she leaves. She goes back home to Keith, who is very blunt about how awful the rash looks, and it does. And of course, Stacey is like upset at herself that she's allergic to the best lotion in the world that she thinks here. Keith reminds her that she has, you know, sensitive skin, and she just comes right back with like, I have a bad face, stupid, bad, ugly face. And like, this is, again, the core message here of this episode of just like her own, you know, self-image is just so, so bad that like this lotion, this cream has such an effect on her that like she just forces herself to be a part of it. And, you know, again, we cut later that night. Stacey's unable to sleep. She's like itching all over. Her face, again, is still looking very evocative here. And she goes downstairs to watch TV. And who do we see but an Aloe Glow commercial? And then it gets very real very quickly. And I feel like this is probably the part where Todd was talking about before of just like, is this a dream? Is this reality? Is this like, what is this? The Aloe Glow Man starts talking directly to her using her name. And like being very specific to her situation, talking about like the bank, getting the other women to not laugh at her. You know, Stacey, almost at the start, kind of doesn't believe that this is happening. She's very skeptical to what's going on. And then it gets, again, very specific. And, you know, she's laughing. The Alec Lowman's like, what's so funny? And this is where we get some of the mantras of the episode that she says kind of repeatedly, that the lotion hurts when it works. And the itching means that it is healing, which, yikes, that's just not how this works. You know, it's such a shame to have to be you, because you're not somebody anybody wants to be around. You're not someone anyone wants to see. In true acceptance, harmony, peace, and divinity, all that stuff is a lie. We all just want to be good looking. Scathing, just a scathing review of any kind of healthy amount of self-confidence here. Like, this is brutal. And of course, like, we know, we see Stacey's face here. It's like, she's going to be convinced of this. She already believes this about herself. And of course, we end with Stacey calling the number. It's a late night commercial. So, you know, calling the number and ordering a bunch of Alec Glow, putting her credit card in. And just her image is just deteriorating at a lightning quick pace, Todd.
Yeah, this whole scene is great. Dan Stevens plays the Alec Glow guy, and he has this very weird accent. It's like I don't even know how to describe it, but it is but he's just like listening to all this stuff. And one of my favorite lines he says to her is like, "Why be the odd duck out when you can join the flock?" You know, which feels very fitting with the whole stuff earlier. But also, the assistant lists the side effects. The side effects may include change of mood, stiff joints, hallucinations, fear of intimacy, internal emptiness, lack of ambition, lack of individualization, lack of independent thought or opinion, which kind of describes most of the women at the party. So there might be something to these side effects.
There might be, and we're going to find out quite a bit of the side effects here going forward, because the box of Alec Glow is delivered. Stacey takes a day off of work because her face looks just so bad. Keith comments even on it looking worse, and she really doesn't like that he's commenting about it. And of course, they continue to get in this argument basically the entire episode, of Keith saying, "You look great." Stacey being like, "No, I don't. You're wrong." And she just has to use more of the Alec Glow. She doesn't want to really talk to anyone. And Keith is like really trying his best here to be as supportive as he can. But unfortunately, it's just not even close to enough. And then we continue. She's just putting on more of the Alec Glow. She's just watching more of the TV. Keith really does not have a chance here. And it just continues and continues, even in the middle of the night here, which again is a nightmare. She's sleeping. We get again this very evocative scene, them both in bed. She's just scratching all over herself. It's kind of gross. And like Keith tells her to go get oven mitts to sleep in so she will stop itching, which I actually think is kind of genius when you think about it. I don't know that I could sleep with oven mitts on, but I think it's like the same thing as like a dog a cone or whatever, like to just stop your itching and stuff like that. So pretty good idea from Keith.
Yeah, it feels like a down home, like a chicken pox, workaround. Like, you get chicken pox, slap the mitts on to stop scratching. And I do like the relationship between Keith and Stacey through this whole thing, because Keith is trying to be supportive, but he's not being supportive in a way that is like working for her. And he keeps trying. He's like wanting her to get out of this self-defeatist attitude, but it's that thing where just telling her that he appreciates her, telling her that she's being silly isn't going to break her out of this. He's not saying the things in a way that's going to get her to change her mind. And it's just like this horrible repetition over and over again, her saying how awful she is and him saying, "No, you're not." And him trying to get her to get help and her refusing. It's really heartbreaking to watch, like over the course of the episode, you see like her low self-esteem and how it's leading her down this path. And he obviously loves her and he's trying to help her, but he just can't get through to her. And it's just it's a funny episode, but it's also like a really sad episode in a lot of ways, because he's doing everything he can. He might not always say things the right way, but I think he's doing his best. And it's just she's under the spell of the Alec Glow now, and nothing he says is going to reach her.
Well, and they both started as kind of these very quirky characters that made a lot of sense that they were together. I definitely could like picture their relationship closer to the start, which is very much of like a us against the world, because the world doesn't like recognize us as like one of it. And so I think that that's a really interesting dynamic that like they didn't really explore in this episode, because it was more about Stacy's transformation. But like, There is content to be mined here in terms of like the origin of this relationship, because they both seem very quirky and odd, Todd.
Yeah, I mean, never. He walks in and sees like her working on the stuffed duck, like, oh, you shoot that one yourself? It looks nice. You know, he's just like, you know, super complimentary. He's like all into it, though. He would have appreciated that as a Secret Santa gift, obviously.
I guess he would have. So as she goes downstairs to get the oven mitts, she of course turns on the TV yet again, because we have to use this remote sometime, I suppose. The Allegro Man starts.
Except this time the TV turns on by itself. This is one you're complaining about. The TV turns on without the remote. So well, what's even the point of it?
I don't know, Todd. You tell me. The Allegro Man starts talking to her again. And of course he just continues to tell her, you have to trust him. When he feels like she doesn't, the TV goes to static and just turns off. She like begs and pleads for it to come back. And of course it does, you know, right away, telling her that she has to go all the way. She asks if it will hurt any aspect. You know, you tell me, does it hurt when they exclude you, when they stare at you, when they point and laugh and whisper, which is again, very evocative, because we are seeing this kind of happen. Or at least we are seeing her perceive that this is happening here, which is, you know, perception is reality if you are the one perceiving it. And so, like, this is what is happening to her in her mind, which is, you know, that's what we're seeing. And then he says something quite interesting. He says that her new life is already growing inside of her, under her skin, and instructs her to just keep using more Alloglow. And then it immediately shuts off. So we have to use more Alloglow. And she does quite quickly. She heads down to the basement to get more of the Alloglow. All the caps on the bottles are like popping open. We're getting more horror elements here. Alloglow starts like oozing out of them, which is like funny and gross at the same time. And then she just runs upstairs, jumps in bed, you know, and then we see the shot of the downstairs where the Alloglow just continues to pour out and pour out and pour out. She tries to get help from Keith here, I will say, like, to her credit. She's like, can you stay home from work? She's very scared about this whole situation. The box in the basement continues to overflow as he says no, he has to leave. And the Alloglow begins to gather and build. And we see like this lump on the ground, like this weird floor hump that seems to be growing, full of Alloglow. Probably not a good sign for anything to come here.
Yeah, yeah. And here's, again, the point, like, with the TV stuff, it's like, okay, is this really happening in her head, or is this real? And here's, again, like, okay, is this really happening? Is this real? It's hard to say. Keith never sees it, but I was not expecting the Alloglow to start, like, pouring out and becoming something. That was surprising to me when it happened. So, like, oh, this is going in directions I was not expecting. Cool.
Yeah, well, it continues to go directions I was not expecting either. Keith comes home and calls for Stacy, but we see her upstairs. She's peeling off her skin while looking in a mirror. It was almost like a ridiculously bad sunburn, and you have all of that like dead skin coming off. It was pretty gross. And so she comes down and asks him to not say anything. She doesn't want him to judge her, as we've seen, you know, before. But she looks terrible here, like really, really objectively terrible. There's no way he can't say anything, and of course he does, because he is at least in this episode presented as the reasonable person. It's getting worse and worse. He says he should go to a doctor, and then she like hits him back with so I don't even know how you come back from this, but like she tells him he needs to, you know, be happy for her. This is gonna fix her. Keith tries yet again. Like, you look lovely on the inside and the outside. What do you say the inside? It really means that I'm ugly on the outside, is what she's back. And it's brutal. She wants to tear off all of her skin and throw it in the garbage. Her self-image could not be lower here in this moment. She is fully on board Team Alloglow and wants this to work so much. In fact, she goes to the basement here, finds this Alloglow. It's formed into a body. And then they like are mirroring each other, you know, they're like going in. It's very much like, you know, we see this a lot of like, you know, duplicates or mirrors or, you know, doppelgangers and stuff like that. And then they start to make out.
Yeah. Yeah. I, again, was not expecting that. Was not expecting to go in for the kiss to this like Alloglow golem thing. It's just like, okay. Okay, all right.
I was a little baffled that that was happening. But apparently, like, they go hard in there because when she comes up, it's not just her mouth that is wet, Todd. All of her is covered in the goop. I don't want to know what else was going on in that basement. That's all I'm going to say, because she was absolutely covered head to toe in aloe glow here, and Keith is losing it. Probably because their house is carpeted, and that is that's a bunch of like freaking lotion. You know, it's going to take forever to get out of the carpet. You know, Keith freaks out. She says she's never like felt better, and it's really not good. Keith is like still trying and trying. That's basically the motto of this episode. Keith is like really just trying his best, and it just doesn't work at all. And it comes to a head here quite literally, because as she realizes he won't like change and understand, she stabs him in the head.
Yep.
Just, yep.
And it's so shocking, because he's just has listed off everything he loves about her. Like, he's listing all these things about how he likes that she's good at math, how she likes that she does this. And he says that she's perfect. He's like, I think you're perfect. And she says, well, that's what's wrong with you, Keith, that you think I'm perfect. And yeah, she's like, oh man, you're never going to want me to change. And then she stabs him, and his response is, what the F, Stace? You stabbed me in the face. It's just like,
he was so calm and casual. He was like, could you give me a towel? Can you, we need to, oh, this is not good. We need a radio. Can you give me a towel? He like starts to radio it in, Todd. She apparently goes off to the towel as much as like he thinks. And then when she comes back with, let me tell you, not a towel. Instead, it's the axe we saw, and she axes him.
Yep. Chekhov's axe coming back in the back, you know, and then she hits him, and he's like, oh, something fell on me, hun. He's just not quite, you know, I think if she stabbed him, because she stabbed him in the forehead, so I think she got pretty deep in there, because I don't think his brain is quite working right now. But yeah, and then she whacks him a couple more times, and yeah, and that's the end of poor Keith.
Yeah, we'll be seeing you, Keith. I guess it was a fun ride.
Yeah. Oh, we will be seeing him still.
Yeah, we will be. She goes upstairs. She follows the aloe glow footprints and finds this, like, you know, the lump, humanoid creature, golem, whatever, standing in the bath. It immediately just, liquefies right there. And she strips and submerges herself. And it's so gross. The look on her face, she's, like, so hopeful here in this moment that this is going to do it. And then... I will say the aftermath of this, I love the ending of this episode, because I it was just so good. And so we have Sexy Thing playing throughout the vast majority of this a couple different times here, as she has now reemerged from the aloe glow and it's basically an entirely new person. And she is shedding all of this dead skin / lotion / whatever all throughout the house. And eventually she gets to the mirror. She sheds it completely, and her skin looks great here. And she's so excited to show Keith this transformation, and almost forgets that she just brutally murdered him a little while ago. Comes down.
It's a minor detail.
It's pretty major, Todd. It's murder is major. I've always been saying. And she goes down, and Keith's corpse is just right there, his dead body, which was poked and stabbed in the forehead and in the back. And she drags him down to the basement and begins the taxidermy process on Keith. And we see her pull out some insides. I really thought we were done with that the last episode.
Remember I said, there's actually some sort of connection to these two episodes. And this is it.
Yeah.
Removing guts from people. That seems to be the connection between these two episodes.
This was probably the weakest part of the episode for me. Just because, like, if that was going to be a part of, like, oh, she enjoys that element of it, I feel like we would have seen that on the duck a little bit. And we didn't. And so... I don't know. But she does. It's weird. It's creepy. And then the next morning she wakes up, she gives herself this full makeover. She does the hair cutting, which I've been told if you chop off your hair, that is a huge sign of change. That's massive going on there. She says goodbye to taxidermy Keith, who is sitting there still watching the TV. Yikes, heads back to work. And of course, when she arrives, every single person at the bank, all of her coworkers, especially Gina, are looking her up and down. They are so enamored by her because she does look incredible. It's not, you know, she looks very good. And oh my gosh, they are just infatuated with her at this point. And you know, that's basically where this story ends, is that she was able to go through this transformation. She killed Keith, and now everyone at work just loves her.
Yeah. And the final shot is like, cause she's now taking over Gina's role. Like, she starts the gossip. She's talking about people and they're all just like fascinated with her. And then she starts laughing and there's just this close up on her face. And it's like the most uncomfortable shot, because it goes on and on and on while, like, I believe a sexy thing is still playing in the background, and her face goes through, like, she like laughs and then she kind of stops and gets kind of this sad look on her face, and then this like kind of crazy maniacal laugh, and then she gets sad again and then crazy again. She kind of cycles through this like several times, and the background behind her just kind of becomes like this soft light, and like the back, like, you don't see anything other than this light behind her, and she's kind of like, just her head is moving back and forth. It's like this really long shot of her just cycling through all these emotions as she's like, it's like she's happy and she's sad and she's obviously lost her mind, and it's just like this very, very like powerfully bizarre end of the episode, and I loved it.
Yeah, and I think that like the reason this episode for me is far superior than the other three is because this message of self-image and like this transformation that you're trying to go to at what cost, and just the whole idea of like where we as people find our own self-worth and our like self-beauty, I think is fascinating. And I think that there's like a lot to be said on this subject. And I think that television can be a very effective way to do that because of how often we see almost the opposite happen, where everyone, you know, it's so hard for me sometimes when I see shows that are like, they're trying to say, oh, this unattractive person could never be with this attractive person. But then like the unattractive person is like Zooey Deschanel. And it's like, what are we doing here? Like, you can't tell me that some of these unattractive people are actually unattractive. And I just love this idea of self-image and the way that they shot it, especially with all of like the effects and all of like the makeup and stuff that they did with Micucci, I thought was spectacular to like really show that. And I think that like that to me shined much more this episode than the previous three episodes in terms of the overall message of what we were being shown and why we were being shown it, Todd.
Yeah, because I mean the basic message was, yeah. I mean, she basically sells her humanity to fit in. She sells her humanity to be one of the popular people. And she had like she had a loving husband, someone who loved her. She had her hobbies, she had this feeling, but there's this one thing that she didn't have, and she became so fixated on that she lost sight of all of this other stuff. And she was willing to like change herself completely and give up everything that was good about herself in order to fit in. And it's like, that's the true horror of all this. Plus, you know, the whole killing her husband thing, that's a bit horror too. But the true horror is like, she like sacrificed her humanity, sacrificed everything that she was just to fit in with these mindless, vapid people. And you know, one of the side effects was loss of self-individualization. And she's no longer the individual she was before. Now she's just like the rest of them. Now she has gone through this whole transformation that she was wanting, and the transformation succeeded. Now she's just like the rest of them. And she might be like the leader for now, but how long is that going to last? There's no telling. No, and to one other point, you know, a lot of times like on the show, it's like, oh, well, oh, yeah, oh, she's unattractive. Oh, wait, she took her glasses off and now she's attractive. That's like the trope. Like I said, like the makeup they did, I mean, they didn't just like dress Kate McKinnon down. Like they gave her false teeth. They did all sorts of stuff on her. And whenever she's done, her teeth were fixed. I think that's like after she gets, it's not just her skin, like every single thing about her has been fixed that was like an imperfection before. So the Alglow like did more than just like, it wasn't just like the skin. It was like her whole body has been transformed by the process. So I appreciate that aspect of it. So it's not necessarily just all in her head, because again, the people at the bank, everything at the bank is also in her head, who knows? But if it's real, then they also recognize a transformation. But there is, again, the ambiguity there. So no, I think it's a really well done episode, again buoyed by the performances, but again the direction I think is great. The direction, the camera work and everything really highlights Stacy as an outsider, and highlights like the bizarre nature of everything that's going on. Like you said, like the whole scene with the lotion, like the way the women on the couch are shot versus the way that Stacy is shot, again, just really highlights that. I thought it was like a really well-crafted episode of TV, like on every front.
Yeah, totally agree. High watermark of the season. This will be my expectation going forward. So hopefully we can meet and exceed that. I have faith because this show has given me reason to have faith. And so, you know, I'm in, you know, we're halfway through at this point, which is, you know, feels fast. It feels very, you know, only 8 episodes here. They're obviously all very different episodes, but only 8 of them. We're through half of them. And so, yeah, really good episode. Overall, very interesting. We will be back in just a couple of days to talk through episode 5. And of course, we'll give our little preview. But if you are spoiler averse, we'll see you in just a couple of days. And before we do that, Todd, what are you doing these days? What are you up to? Where can we find you? Quick plugs.
You can find me on Twitter at Librarian Todd, because Todd Librarian is too many characters. You can find me every week over on One Indescribable Podcast with Adam and TV Lindy, where we talk about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and that Twitter is 1CXG Podcast. And you can find me over on twitch.tv/DMPhilly, occasionally playing a Wheel of Time-based Dungeons & Dragons game called Threads in the Pattern.
Yeah, amazing. You can find me, like Todd said, or talking about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, as well as on various post-show recaps podcasts, the Mythic Quest podcast with Jess Sterling. Season 3 is starting to come out. We're very excited about that. Talking about Doctor Who with Kevin Madeo and Melissa Woodward. And then, of course, Final Fantasy VII Remake with Brooklyn Zed. And you can find me on Twitter at PianoManAdam1 if you want to engage more in these conversations. I would highly recommend you come join the Post Show Recaps Patreon, patreon.com/postshowrecaps. If you want to join in the conversations, tell us why we were wrong about every take we had today. You know, tell Todd why he was right and tell me why I was wrong. Or, you know, if you want to get in my good graces, you could do the opposite. But do that. We love having conversations about the shows that we're talking about here, and we are covering basically everything at Post Show Recaps. So come join us over there. But that is enough preamble. Anyone who is spoiler-averse has already left, Todd. So episode 5. What are we looking for? What can we expect? What should we be seeing here before we watch?
All right, so the next episode is called Pickman's Model, and it's based on a short story by H.P. Lovecraft, a very well-known name in the world of horror. Like Lovecraftian is an actual, you know, descriptor of types of horror. And this is a little bit of a Lovecraftian horror story. I'd say the things that you'll see is to brace yourself for is some blood, some mutilation. There's going to be a little bit of eye stuff, maybe, so just brace yourself for that. But the story, it's a period piece. It's set like in the early 1900s. So we're definitely getting a kind of closer to like Graveyard Rats and the type of like world and atmosphere that we're going to be seeing. So that's something to look forward to. Maybe.
Okay. Well, you've teed us up nicely here. We will be back in just a couple of days to talk through Cabin of Curiosity episode 5. And until then, bye.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.